Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back. It is Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN here on a Sunday. And as we've been doing, talking about state and local politics, and let's continue that. We had GOP Chairman Nick Langworthy on in the first hour, as well as Republican candidate for Comptroller Lynn Dixon. Let's get the view from the other side. We have Erie County Democrat Chairman Jeremy Zellner joining us. Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Doing well, Jeremy. First question I have for you before we get into the elections. I know it's a busy time of year for you, but I'd like to know how you think Governor Kathy Hochul has done at the almost two-month mark.
Well, I got to tell you, she's taken the state by storm, as I expected her to. I think she's taken the reins governmentally and has really done a good job continuing to protect the public from COVID issues and clean up things from Governor Cuomo's administration. And, you know, I talk to a lot of people throughout the state on a daily basis, and they're all very impressed. She's picked up a lot of political support in the last 2 months as well. So I think she's doing very, very well, better than a lot of people thought she would be.
You know, I know it's way too early to ask this, but that's the point of this show. Looking forward to 2022, do you see or having any difficulty getting through a primary season?
Well, I mean, I don't know about difficulty, but like, for instance, she just picked up the endorsement from the Syracuse Committee, the Democratic Party, the Rochester Democratic Party, the Albany Democratic Party. She's getting a lot of endorsements and support from across the state. And she's spending a lot of time in the city. That's where she's least known, I think, in the state. But polling just came out showing that she's in a strong lead. She's got strong favorabilities. And I know Kathy. She's a friend, and I know she's tenacious. And she's not going to let 1 minute pass by where she doesn't get out there and work hard. You know, she and I have talked quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. I know she's working hard every day for the people of New York.
Now, I know it's a busy month for you as the election season is here. We're less than a month away. The one that everyone is talking about, you know, for the 33 years I can remember of elections, Jeremy, I don't remember an off-year election getting the attention that the City of Buffalo mayoral race is getting. How do you like how it's looking less than a month until Election Day?
Well, you know, Joe, it's an unprecedented situation to be in here with a write-in. This size. I'm not sure it's ever happened in the state, the size of this write-in. We've got our work cut out for us at the board, but we're going to be meeting with the campaigns to set the ground rules and discuss, you know, any questions that they have, so there's no surprises. And, you know, we'll know on election night. We should know, unless it's really close, that we could have a winner. I don't think we should declare a winner on election night, but it's going to take some time because we're going to have to hand count a lot of ballots. And, as we say here at the board, we're not going to just rush. We're going to get it done and count every single ballot like we do every election. So I'm confident Commissioner Moore and I are going to be able to handle this process. You know, if we got through last year, we can get through anything.
Do you expect a high turnout, especially of Democrats, because of the race going on in the City of Buffalo?
I think so. I think we're going to see a lot of turnout across the county. This is a difficult year for Democrats traditionally, and it's because our people don't really get the seriousness of these local elections. And most people have kind of a political hangover after the presidential election. So the next cycle is a difficult time to ramp up voters and make them realize that, hey, we've got a county sheriff's race, we've got a county comptroller's race, every county legislator's up for reelection, every town has races across the county. This isn't just two people running for president every 4 years that you vote. We have to vote every year.
Looking at other races throughout the county, what do you have your eye on? You know, I see a lot on social media. Don't hear as much about it, but I hear a lot on social media about the Hamburg supervisor. What are some other races that you're keeping an eye on?
Well, our priority this year is to bring the sheriff's department back and get somebody with responsible leadership there. You know, it's been 16 years of Republican control, 16 years of reckless leadership, lack of leadership. There's some great officers in the Erie County Sheriff's Department that are lacking the training and lacking the leadership. And I think Kim Beattie is going to bring that. You know, so we're laser focused on the sheriff's race and the comptroller's race. You know, somebody close to the people on this station, Kevin Hardwick, I think he's just the right kind of independent guy, a good government person that we need in the comptroller's office. We're laser focused on the countywide races, but Hamburg is on fire right now. We've got some incredible people running on our party over there. The town of Amherst has a full slate of going there. Supervisor Culpa's running and a slate of council members. You know, in the town of Tonawanda, we have three women running for office there. So there's races across the county that are important. So we're kind of working overtime at Democratic headquarters. You know, we've got three shifts going there and getting the resources out to our Democrats.
You know, Jeremy, I want to go back to the mayoral race for just a quick second and say in a situation that Mayor Byron Brown does win election, would he still be mayor as a Democrat, or would that change after the election?
No, I would expect him to remain as a Democrat. He's a lifelong Democrat. You know, Joe, the rhetoric is just going beyond anything I've ever seen before on both sides, you know. I just want this election to be over with like never before. But, you know, the mayor has every right to run a write-in campaign. He's doing it. I don't like the fact that he's taking a lot of Republican support. I think that's problematic. But he's doing what he has to do to win. I don't think that he would ever change parties. But there's just a lot of negativity on India Walton that's unfair. A lot of attacks on her that is just unfair. India Walton wants a safe community, bottom line. She wants a safe community that people can live in and have a home and be able to, you know, live without poverty and live to build for the future. That's what she wants to do. And anyone who says, you know, she just wants anarchy or anything else like that is just, it's just rhetoric. And we hear that a lot these days, and we just need to get down to the facts. And I think you're going to hopefully see that come to an end, or, you know, maybe crescendo here. I don't know. I just wish we can get down to talking about the issues.
You know, going back to that primary, and as being the Democrat chairman, were there some lessons learned about an incumbent and how a primary should be run from what happened this summer in the mayoral primary?
You know, I don't know about that, Joe. All I can tell you is, you know, we haven't lost a primary in 5 years. Every endorsed candidate that's run in this county there's been a lot of challenges to us, and we haven't lost one in 5 years. The fact that the primary date has changed has really confused a lot of people. We had 13% turnout in June. That means, you know, 13% of the people made the decisions on countywide offices and citywide offices. So the fact is that people are just confused. This is a new thing to have the primary in June. And I think that really spoke to more than anything. But the voters in Buffalo, the Democrats, voted for India Walton. We respect that. And that's important. And if I believed it was important to support her as Democratic Party chair, and I don't think there was any other option for us, because if I'm not going to support the Democratic mayoral candidate, I should just hang it up. And we've worked with her. And we've been a part of her campaign ever since. And, you know, the voters are going to have to decide which direction they want to head. I think she's brought a strong argument here for change, so much so that I think the mayor's running on change right now. I think he's come a long way in this campaign to realize there's a lot of things that need to be done in the city. And so we'll see. It's a cliche, but it's up to the voters.
Jeremy, looking at Election Day, there's also the other side of the ballot in those questions statewide. Where do the Democrats stand on those questions on the other side of the ballot?
Well, I mean, most of these, I think all of them except for one or two are really for upstate and for us. And we support all of them. You know, there's some things about the redistricting process that are important to change. We've got things about absentee ballots. being able to request one without having an excuse for it. And then the registration requirements, you know, we've got our work cut out for us to make sure that all this stuff succeeds once implemented. And I believe they will all be implemented.
Yeah, I want to talk about that the same-day registration. You know, with all these questions, and this isn't – I'm not giving an opinion in favor or against, but with all the issues we had with people questioning the outcome of recent elections, do you think same-day registration is going to make people feel more confident in the outcome of their elections?
Well, it should. I mean, we ought to be removing any roadblock to democracy, period, end of story. Same-day registration, we basically have now if someone is voting via affidavit. You know, if you're not registered to vote in the proper place, but you live somewhere else, you can always use an affidavit and swear that that is where you are, and your vote will count. We scrutinize and check all of this stuff. We have lots of different checks and balances. There is no voter fraud in the state of New York. There is no rampant voter fraud in this country. We have one of the best systems set up in a bipartisan fashion in the state of New York. And so the job of implementing same-day registration is not going to be easy, but neither was early voting. Implementing early voting was very difficult. Last year with the absentee ballots was very difficult. And I'm proud of the work we've done here at the board in a bipartisan fashion with Commissioner Moore to implement all that stuff. But just because it's going to be hard doesn't mean we shouldn't remove that roadblock from democracy here.
And I will say, last year, the early voting, I took part in the early voting, and it was a simple and very easy process. And I will definitely say that that ran very smoothly. But going to same-day registration, do you think there's a way we could look at this? Maybe with a state law where voter ID, some kind of ID would be accepted to ease those concerns people have at the ballots?
Well, there shouldn't be concerns, first. Second, there is going to have to be some kind of system put in place to make sure that we do what we do now. When you vote for the first time, we ask for ID because we need to see your license or your ID because you've never signed anything unless we have something on file for you. So we do that now where we check a signature. We check all the signatures of people. The commission, the inspectors at the polling place look at them to make sure that they're not completely different. So we're going to have to implement this in a proper way that gives everyone confidence. There's no question, Joe.
And that redistricting, now we'll see where this vote goes, but what are you looking forward to? We had George Maziarz on here a few weeks ago talking about that redistricting. What are you looking for in the redistricting process going toward 2022?
You mean congressional?
Yeah, congressional redistricting.
Well, putting on my chairman hat, I think it would be a travesty to Western New York if we had another earmuff situation. If we had another situation where, you know, we had to cut across and gerrymander a district to get people in from a different region, I think that's a problem. It's supposed to be like-minded communities. You know, I think what was put out there showing Niagara Falls taken away from Congressman Higgins and Buffalo over here is a problem. Buffalo and Niagara Falls face the same challenges. They're very similar, and I think we need to try to hold them together as best we can.
That was Erie County Democrat Chairman and Erie County Board of Elections Democratic Commissioner Jeremy Zellner. If you missed any of our interviews today, maybe it was Jeremy Zellner, who we just had on, Nick Langworthy, or Lynn Dixon from the first hour, you can find those on demand at WBEN.com and on the Odyssey app. Now, Congressman Brian Higgins was to join us this morning, but that got moved to next week. So 10:06 next week, Congressman Brian Higgins will be joining us live here on Hardline. So we have a lot to talk about with him, especially the border being reopened, the land border between Canada and the United States. We'll see that in November. So we will talk to Congressman Brian Higgins next week, 10:06. You'll want to tune in for that. Now, there's a lot that's been going on in the political world nationwide. And since we spent the first 90 minutes of the show talking local and state elections, we're going to see in the next segment
what's going on nationwide, especially in the state of Virginia, with that governor's race heating up and a lot of attention from the national parties going in to that governor's race in Virginia. So we have that and a lot of national things live from Washington, D.C. Dave Leventhal will be joining us after the news. It's Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Well, welcome back. The final segment of Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN on a Sunday morning, a chilly Sunday morning, but, you know, feels good to have the windows open, right? Nice, eventful, I don't know, something. We have our final guest, Mr. Dave Leventhal, Deputy Washington Bureau Chief at Business Insider. Dave, good Sunday morning.
And a good Sunday to you, Joe Beamer.
Now, let me ask you, Dave, before we get into the serious questions, you know, it's not a the Bills don't play today. They don't play till tomorrow. How does that change Sundays at the Leventhal House?
I mean, I would consider that to be a very serious question, one with great import here in the Leventhal House. We actually went out to a pumpkin patch this morning to go and get in the Halloween spirit. But, yeah, I like a lot of Buffalonians right now, I feel myself just trying to get through this day the best one can without a Bills Sunday, and just try to fill the time until the real important stuff takes place around 8 o'clock tomorrow on Monday.
You know, it's funny, when we were when the Bills were bad, I always said, oh, I wish, you know, they'd get a primetime game, get on Monday Night Football. Now when they're good, I'm like, I just want a 1 o'clock Sunday game.
Well, you know, let's just bask in the moment, whether it's Sunday, Monday, Thursday, you know, the eighth day of the week. I don't care when it comes. As long as the Bills are playing like they are these days, I'm feeling pretty good about life.
That's right. Now, Dave, the last few segments, we were talking about local elections here. And I know, you know, 2021, it's a big year for local elections, some state elections. And looking at that, it seems like a lot of attention nationally has been put on this election going on very close to you in the state of Virginia. What can you tell us about that?
Well, first of all, it is sort of the marquee off-election year election. So we always think of things in terms of even years. And 2020, we have our presidential race, congressional and Senate. 22, we've got a huge midterm election coming up that is going to decide what could possibly be a major shift in the balance of power here on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., with the Senate and the House potentially flipping back to Republicans if things go that way. But yeah, 2021, a lot of eyes are on what's happening with the gubernatorial race in Virginia. And people may be asking themselves, well, wait a second, why should I care about the gubernatorial race in Virginia? Well, I'm often kind of loath to put too much on a single election as a bellwether for the nation. But this one may be it. You have Glenn Youngkin, who's a Republican, who's walking a very, very fine line between appealing to people who are hardcore Donald Trump supporters in the Republican Party and among independents, and also to appealing to those who are Republicans and independents who are not that crazy about Donald Trump, but really don't want to see a Democrat go in there. And the Democrat who we're talking about is Terry McAuliffe, who's the former governor of Virginia. All the polls are showing this, Joe, to be a really close race. You've got national entities all over the place getting involved. This is a very nationalized race, sort of a true example of a local, you know, state affair that has totally become something that is, at least from a fundraising standpoint, definitely a 50-state affair.
Now, you know, some might be wondering, well, didn't Terry McAuliffe, wasn't he governor already? And that's one of those weird laws in Virginia where you can't be the governor back-to-back terms, correct?
Exactly. And, you know, if you're only familiar with how New York state politics work and gubernatorial elections there, you're like, oh, you know, governor could be the governor forever, right? And in Virginia, it's very, very different. And that's also the case in other states. My first job was up in New Hampshire, where governors are elected every 2 years, not every 4 years. So each state has their own peculiarities, and Virginia is definitely chief among them, which is why we are having this situation that we're in with Terry McAuliffe having a comeback of sorts because he was basically forced to leave the governor's office and now is trying to give himself a chance to get back in there.
Another big news coming out of D.C. that affects us right here in Western New York is that the Biden administration finally going to allow letting some Canadians cross the border if they're vaccinated. Did this generate a big buzz in D.C. over the week?
Well, definitely among my friends and colleagues and cohorts who are from the Buffalo area, or for that matter, from the Detroit area, too. I mean, this has been months and months in the making, and the rules have seemingly just been, you know, changing or being put off month by month, even week by week. And you can fly in, but you can't drive in. And what about trains and boats? And, but some people are like, well, let me take a spaceship, you know, from one country to another. I was up in Boston in August and with a bunch of Canadians who came in. And, I mean, to get from Calgary, where they were coming, to Boston was just an incredibly difficult prospect for them, and they were able to do it anyway. But bottom line is this is going to be a huge boon to people on the border for both countries, and it's been something that Democrats and Republicans on the border, if there's one thing that they can agree on, generally speaking, it's been open the borders. We need to make this happen now. There's no reason we should not.
I was just going to say that, you know, with when you don't have a lot of bipartisanship in Washington, D.C., it was kind of refreshing to see here in Western New York the two congressmen, Brian Higgins and Chris Jacobs, working together and agreeing on something.
Well, the old adage, all politics are local, really kind of seems to be going out the window with many different issues that we're facing all across the country. But this was one of those very, very local issues where national partisan considerations were definitely taking a second chair to the local issue, which was, all right, let's get this border open so that people from Western New York can get up to Canada and folks from Southern Ontario can get to Buffalo, and we can be doing the things that we normally do when life was back in a more normal state back in 2019. And we want to get back there today, and that is seemingly going to be the glide path that we're on for the next couple of weeks.
Now, something that we can't find agreement, even some in one certain party, and that is infrastructure and the debt ceiling. Now, I think it was last week, the debt ceiling was voted to raise the debt ceiling. Does this get us anywhere closer to not talking about infrastructure as much?
Now we're going to be talking about infrastructure still for potentially weeks to come. And much of the action right now is not Republican versus Democrat here in Washington up on Capitol Hill. It's Democrat versus Democrat, a very intramural situation, if you will, Joe, where you have two senators in particular. One is Joe Manchin, senator from West Virginia, a Democrat, and Senator Kyrsten Sinema, also a Democrat, Arizona. And the two of them are really just sparring with their own party as to what they want out of everything that you just mentioned, in particular the price tag for the Joe Biden social spending plan, which was originally, you might have heard the number, $3.5 trillion thrown around a whole lot. Well, it's not clear exactly what they want in this bill, but they do know that they don't want the price tag to be that high. So we're talking about all different types of actions or cuts or slashes or renegotiations that might be taking place within the Democratic Party to get to a point where the Democrats can just simply agree enough on this bill to move forward with it and try to ram it through. And one thing that's being talked in earnest about being cut out of this is a major environmental component to this package, this legislation, which Joe Manchin in particular is very concerned would hurt his constituency, which is still very much made of coal workers and people who service the coal industry. And he just simply doesn't want environmental plans to go forward that he feels would be detrimental to his constituents. So, again, local politics kind of rearing their head in a major way with great national import in effect.
So does this go back? Will this go back to the drawing board? I mean, I think it seems that to me. Now, obviously, Dave, I'm not there every day. I'm up here in Buffalo, but it seems to me that Joe Manchin nor Kyrsten Sinema are going to budge on this number. You know, they've had meetings with the president. They've had meetings with leaders. I mean, they're going to have to revise this bill, correct?
The Democrats almost have no choice, or the vast majority of Democrats, the leadership of the Democratic Party, they just simply do not have a choice at this point. Otherwise, the whole thing is going to fall apart, or it's going to get delayed into 2022, which is for them politically untenable, especially since you're going into election season. So this, in a way, has to get done right now if there's a real solid chance for this passing. But there are going to be a lot of very, very, very disappointed and angry Democrats. There already are, Joe, who are absolutely not pleased at the way this is going, feel that Manchin and Sinema are betraying the Democratic Party, are betraying Joe Biden. And a lot of Republicans right now are kind of just sitting back with their popcorn, laughing a little bit, saying, well, they can't even get their own house in order. They don't have to worry about us blocking them. They're blocking themselves.
And now, December 6th, we're going to see another hope. You know, that's when the temporary spending bill expires. Is this still going to be playing a factor in December 6th as you see it now? Are we going to get an agreement by December 6th, or are we going to need another temporary spending bill to keep the government open through the holidays?
There is a possibility, and when we're talking about Joe Biden's spending plan and we're talking about the debt ceiling, these things are linked, but they're exclusive to one another. So we're actually talking about two different issues here. So, yeah, they kicked the proverbial political can down the road. And come December 6th and then the weeks leading up to it, they're going to be talking about it again because they have no choice in the matter but to do it. So whether Democrats and Republicans will be able to come together, or for that matter, Democrats and Democrats will be able to come together to put together a different solution to this vexing problem that seems to rear its head every couple of years when we get to this point, you know, this is just the way that it's going to work, or some might argue not work, and then ultimately get to some sort of unsatisfactory conclusion that is only really temporary in its nature. So, yeah, expect for that to happen as well. Happy Thanksgiving, right?
Exactly. Now, Dave, there are two people that over the weekend or on Friday got a lot of tweets from you on Twitter, and I want to ask about them, starting with Senator Kyrsten Sinema. There's a connection between her and wine.
There is. We reported back in May at Insider that she had actually, strangely enough, worked a side job, a side hustle back in August of 2020. She was a winery intern at a winery out in California. So we and some news organizations, after we reported that, started digging into the nature of this relationship and found out that it's very much a two-way wine trail, if you will, where she had worked a winery internship there. She had actually gotten a lot of political contributions from the owner of this winery, who is a former private equity billionaire leader, and also, too, that this winery has played host to fundraisers for her political campaign. So flash forward to Friday night when we reported that Sinema actually made a campaign purchase from that winery. It was listed as a quote-unquote meetings expense, and we called the winery and was like, hey, what's up with this? What's going on? What did the senator actually buy? And they kind of gave us a different story to say that actually she bought wine from her campaign and a virtual wine tasting opportunity. So we have not gotten any response from the Sinema campaign or her congressional office, Senate office, as to what exactly this is. Federal law says that you can't use your campaign money, generally speaking, for personal use, although it's possible that they would have bought and purchased wine for a meeting or some other type of political event. But just another example of this kind of odd connection that Kyrsten Sinema has with this winery, which actually a couple of weeks ago got lampooned on Saturday Night Live, of all things. It doesn't seem as if Kyrsten Sinema can go a day without some sort of political drama going on, this just being the latest example, Joe.
So, Dave, was she flying to California to work the internship?
Yeah, she physically was there. And so during the August recess of 2020, she was a Harvest intern. Her office confirmed it to us. Her winery bosses confirmed it to us. And in fact, they said that she was a very, very excellent winery intern. Now, some people might be like, wait, what? You can work as an intern when you're a U.S. senator? And she was able to get it approved by the Senate Ethics Committee. There are some senators who do work little side jobs or might teach as a professor, I guess lecture at colleges. These are some things that we see from time to time. But this was probably the most exotic and unexpected type of side hustle that we've seen any U.S. senator at least working in a long time.
Now, the other person that has gotten a lot of attention, Dave, is Pete Buttigieg. Apparently, he's been on leave, and that's starting to make the news.
Sure has, and it's really kind of ignited a debate over paternity leave. So Pete Buttigieg and his husband had twins, and that happened back in August of this year, and Pete Buttigieg went on paid paternity leave, and he was very proud to do so and makes no apologies for going on paid leave, even though he's the transportation secretary of the country. And in essence, wanted to kind of set a standard, too, for parents, fathers, to have the same opportunities, paid paternity leave, which from company to company varies greatly as to what a father might get when he has a son or a daughter. And so this is definitely something Tucker Carlson weighed in. Others have weighed in from the other side on the left, and it definitely well beyond Pete Buttigieg himself is definitely here in Washington, and I would say all across the country too, to some extent, has really created a conversation over, well, what's appropriate? Should dads get 6 weeks off paid leave? Should they get more or less? Should they get any at all? And I suspect a lot of people listening right now will have strong opinions on that matter too, especially us dads who've been there and done that.
Yeah, might be a topic on talk show this week. Dave, something.
It might be.
Speaking of transportation, something that Brian and I talked about on BMAZ and Beamer on Friday is this looming mandate, a vaccination mandate for the TSA, and it's hitting November 22nd. Seems like an awful time when you have 40% of TSA agents still unvaccinated. Are people talking about this in D.C. and the chaos this might cause come holiday time?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a huge issue for the TSA and other places that are facing vaccine mandates. There obviously is a concern that there's going to be 5, 10, 15% of that particular workforce that just simply won't be showing up or will be taking leave or won't be working anymore. And when it comes to the TSA during the busiest holiday period, although it may be a little less busy this time around, still with pandemic considerations, that's a huge deal. We just wrote a story, my colleague Nicole Gaudiano at Insider, about other problems with the TSA right now, including employees who are just completely burned out. Some are taking second jobs or leaving their TSA shift and going and, you know, driving Uber shifts for 10 hours overnight just to make ends meet. So they that particular agency has several things going on right now, which may make passengers on airplanes feel a little bit concerned about exactly the state of that agency. But it also, too, speaks to just broader transportation issues that the country is facing. We're starting to hear a lot more nationally about supply chain issues, which is not exactly something that is on most people's minds normally, but we've got tons of ships that are sitting off the coast of California with goods that just can't be transported to other parts of the country because of breakdowns in ground shipping and in port considerations. So this is not the sexiest political topics in the world, Joe, but when the prices of goods are going up or you can't get stuff that you need, whether it's cars or stuff stocked on your shelves at your local store, then that does become a really big issue and one that you start caring about a whole heck of a lot more than you would otherwise.
Yeah, Dave, and I agree. And, you know, you mentioned cars. We heard about the chip shortage for some of these cars. You know, you drive by some of these dealerships, they're starting to look lighter than usual. So you're definitely starting to see the effects of this locally. But, you know, on that mandate for TSA agents, has anyone talked about possibly moving that so it wouldn't create the holiday chaos? Is there any push from the right, from someone within the Biden administration to push this off until maybe the end of December so it doesn't cause that chaos?
What I know at this point is that there has not been any action, firm action taken. But yes, that is a possibility. And if things really got bad, then we've seen this before. We'll see it again, that the goalposts may indeed move. But I wouldn't predict anything. And I don't think anyone at this point is in a position to predict whether that will or will not be the case. So what I would say is that if you are traveling during the Thanksgiving holiday or traveling sometime during November or December, then be prepared, because it may not necessarily be a very easy time to do so, and you could be looking at some definite backups at airports, longer lines, and just a variety of inconveniences during what is, of course, always a pretty tenuous time for flying around the country.
And you know, Dave, in Buffalo, a lot of people will be getting on airplanes that week, heading to New Orleans for a certain game Thanksgiving night.
Absolutely, and if you look at the photos from Nashville and Bills fans going down there, I bet there will be more than a couple of Buffalonians who will be traveling down to New Orleans. So, yeah, nobody wants to miss their flight or miss their plane or otherwise be sitting back in the airport when they should be up in the air going to where they want to go, whether it's New Orleans or grandma's house and across the country or whatever the case may be.
Hey, Dave, we noticed this week, hey, when you get a good luck wish from the New York Mets, your season starts off pretty good.
Yeah, I have a feeling that one of the two people on this phone call is particularly proud of that. I still got to wonder, Joe, if you had any hand in that or took over, you know, social media accounts for the Mets, or you know, maybe there's a story for you to tell here.
Dave, let me tell you, I was just as surprised as you to see my beloved New York Mets cheer on my beloved Buffalo Sabres. But you know what? I'll take it.
I'm not gonna complain either, Joe.
Well, Dave, hopefully I'll be talking to you Tuesday morning, so I hope you're awake when I call you for Susan and Brian.
Awake? I mean, I fully expect to be up all night, unable to sleep because of a great Buffalo Bills victory from that evening.
I hope so. I hope it does not resemble the last time we played the Titans when it was a Tuesday night game. But I don't want to bring up negative memories, Dave, to end this phone call. I thank you so much for joining me, and we here at WBEN will hear from you on Tuesday after the Bills win.
Looking forward to it doubly.
All right, Dave Leventhal, deputy. I always get this wrong. I want to get this right, but I have to have it right in front of me. It is Dave Leventhal, Deputy Washington Bureau Chief at Business Insider, joining me on Hardline. And you can hear Dave every Tuesday at 6:50 on A New Morning with Susan Rose and Brian Mazurowski. We'll be back here tomorrow, Bills Game Day Monday. Enjoy your Sunday afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow starting at 5 a.m. on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.